Thank you very much. Can you hear me okay? Cool. Heidi, hi, campers. It's a beautiful morning. I should have brushed my hair, but I didn't. Anyway, let's watch some films.
Britain, the United Kingdom, an island 700 miles long, 200 miles wide, separated from Europe by the English Channel. Making knives is still a job that requires the skill of the individual worker.
Back among the clatter of the looms, you'll find our Edna and our Annie. They say they get used to the noise and manage to talk by lip reading.
All guns reported ready. The captain gives the order to open fire.
So there's another 2 minutes on that trailer, but I don't like the second half, so you don't get to watch it. I'm Sarah Cole, hello. I worked on these films for a while. for context, why am I talking about this? So in 2010, I was handed a list of 200 films that may or may not exist by the BFI. It turned out that a number of them did. The titles were wrong, the dates were wrong, everything was wrong, but some of them did exist. And so me and my colleagues at the time researched these largely forgotten films, or, well, forgotten, we'll come back to this, spoiler alert. We researched them, we secured some money of Google to No Strings digitize them, and we put them all online under Creative Commons. So you may have seen them before because they now get used in documentaries for the period and stuff quite often. I'll catch my dad watching a documentary about Lincolnshire and be like, oh yeah, I know what that film is, great. Can't escape the work. So this is an image from Queen Cotton. I'm going to tell you what the pictures are from as we go through. That's a film about cotton production and there's a little fashion show at the end. And there's some beautiful cinematography. So, let's proceed. What are these films that I'm talking about? So I'm specifically today talking about the films of the British Council. If you don't know who the British Council are, they're like a cultural relations body overseas. They don't operate much in Britain. These days they're mainly known for their work in teaching English overseas and running kind of international collaborative grants and artistic endeavors. So these films were, there's more than 120 of them. A couple of them have been lost forever, as far as we can tell. We had to repatriate Gardens of England back from New Zealand. They seem to have the only existing copy. Apparently there's an agreement in place where if only one copy exists, you send it back to the BFI. So this is a little haphazard screen grab of all of the ones that are available online. There is also six medical films, which we're not going to cover today. They're highly technical, Kodachrome footage of plastic surgery and other advanced skills at the time, which apparently caused the projectionists to faint. I accidentally made them publicly available once, and there are a lot of tweets going, why has the British Council released these horrible films? And I'm like, sorry, it was on your lunch as well. So these films were made between 1939 and 1950. I shall explain why in a minute. This picture, if you're wondering what on earth is going on, is from a film called They Live Again, and it's about treating injured minors and physical rehabilitation. So these are made in 1939 to 1950. They're generally 10 to 20 minutes long. There are some outliers. There's a 3.5-minute film, which is just colors and shapes set to music by Len Lai, which is completely off-piste. I think they funded it as a favor to Len. This happens a lot. And then there's like a 40-minute one called Steel, which you will see a clip of, which is stunning. You can see why they were like, no, we're going to use all of this footage. But they're generally shorter. Most are black and white, but there are a good chunk of them in color. As Technicolor photography was taking off at the time. They used Kodachrome for those medical films because you couldn't put sufficiently bright arc lamps in the operating theaters to use Technicolor because it would ignite the anesthetic gas. I hope they didn't find that out the hard way. So there's a huge variety of topics. So when you think about films from the 1940s and stuff, you're maybe thinking of cut down your railings and build a Spitfire. This is none of that. This is, here's the National Trust. Isn't cricket great? Would you like to learn about the manufacture of cotton? How about some football? Or here's the social assurance system of Great Britain and our very democratic processes, which unfortunately features John Profumo. I think he does get elected for Kettering in that film. Local government, if you want to go have a laugh of him standing on the back of a car shouting at people. There's a lot of medical stuff. A lot of it's focused on the technology and the industry of Britain, as well as like the countryside and culture. The important thing here is these are designed for an overseas audience. They were shown in Britain, but not extensively. When I say they were shown for overseas audiences, I'll tell you about where they were shown in a bit, but they were not intended for a UK audience. And this is part of why they've sort of been forgotten about in Britain, because they didn't get much circulation here. But first, some pretties. Due to the time period for when this was made, some of the earliest works of some Oscar-winning filmmakers are in this collection. Let me show you. These are not all the same volume, and I apologize. So this is cinematography by Jeffrey Unsworth. He was pioneering and later Oscar-winning Technicolor cinematographer. His better-known works include 2001 A Space Odyssey, Cabaret, and the 1978 Superman. Here we have Jack Cardiff. This is the long film, but you can see why they liked it. This is from 1945.
Fastest of all the methods of making high grade
Jack Cardiff
steel
was hired because
the Bessemer converter process.
Sorry, I shouldn't talk about that. That's John Laurie, who you will know as Fraser from Dad's Army. Jack Cardiff went on to make A Matter of Life and Death, Black Narcissus, The Red Shoes, The African Queen, and Under Capricorn, amongst many others. He got an honorary Oscar for his contribution to cinematography. He was mainly hired because he understood light. He enjoyed paint. And then we've got one by Ken Anakin, which I won't talk over.
Murder.
This is a documentary. Contains unconvincing scenes of murder. So Ken Anakin, this gave him his big break, he said. He would go on to direct Those Magnificent Men in Their Flying Machines, Battle of the Bulge, and many others. He's really prolific, but this, I think, is one of his earliest things. Alfred Hitchcock actually requested a copy of this film to inform the legal procedures featured in the Paradine case. So if that film is wrong, this is why. Apparently, the British Council was so pleased with this, they begged the director to go tour and lecture with the film around South America. I think he said no. But here's the letter from Hitchcock's studio being like, Mr. Hitchcock's making a film. Can you send us a copy of your film about the very accurate film about, you know, making English criminal justice? Words are good. It's fine. Anyway, scooching on. It's important. Here's a little excerpt. I won't read it all out, but this is from the little brochure that they put out with the films every year for distribution. And this is kind of the vibe, as it were. These films form part of an effort to portray the face of Britain and her people and their everyday lives and work. And it does acknowledge the war, but they try not to focus on it because it's depressing. You can come back and read this later.
Jane Martin,
interlude.
Doctor and psychologist, is head of a children's clinic in Manchester. Children meet her as an equal.
In 2 minutes, she makes a rather nervous young man completely at home. He's even ready to help her examine him. After 12 years intensive training and 6 years of practice, she is an established child specialist.
So a lot of it's like that. So let's talk about how these are made in more practical terms. So, they were meant to come in bullet by bullet, but here we are. So, the British Council was only established in 1934 with the goal of maintaining cultural relations with other countries and promoting Britishness and all things British abroad. They teamed up with what was effectively the tourist board for the time, the Travel and Industrial Development Association, which was mainly funded by the railways, and they had a film unit. But obviously, people don't want to come to a country that's undergoing war. So the tourist board shut down, and the British Council sort of just acquired the film production off them. They made films then until 1950, when just staffing and organisational jimmying kind of closed the effort down. No British Council films were produced that mentioned the war until 1942, because they had beef with the Ministry of Information. And then the Ministry of Information was like, all of your films are very out of touch. And they're like, you said we can't talk about the war. And they're like, we think you should just stop making films. And they're like, well, we think you should let us talk about the war. And they said, we never said you couldn't. Okay, fine. So suddenly the films start featuring the war in 1942. So the way they did this was they commissioned lots of different filmmakers and stuff. That's why you end up with such a diversity of filmmakers in this, to produce these titles. It's important to know that these are not documentaries. They are very heavily workshopped. So at the National Archives, there are possibly over 100 boxes full of the production notes for these films. It's incredible. I've read a lot of them, and I've tried to read the rest of them. The handwriting is like, eh. So I'll read you this one, which gives you the kind of idea of the feedback they were getting on the screenplays and the production process. This is for a film provisionally entitled Boat Building. This could be one of four, actually. They made a lot about boats. Quite good in conception and design, but for goodness sake, let the boat which saves soldiers be from Dunkirk. Sorry, which saves soldiers from Dunkirk in part one be a tribute to the British efficiency of boat building and not just a defeatist tribute to the accuracy of German dive bombing. Why should not the boat have survived one bomb after another? Far more boats survived the Dunkirk rescue than were lost. We should make the most of that point. But this is really emblematic of how these films are made and how they come to be kind of utopian. It's not that they set out to go, we're going to make, you know, this super twee thing. They go, oh, that's a bit depressing. Could we just cut that bit? But it turns out if you keep cutting the depressing bits, what you get left with is not quite right. So here's a couple of documents, an example of a shooting status and a cast list. So a lot of the scenes, even if I watch these, I forget, you'll see people in a hospital, people in a trade union cafe. They are all extras. It is all staged, almost entirely anyway. And we have, lists of the actors. We have the wages, we have the set costs and stuff. There's one guy who is the main character in London Terminus, which is a film about Waterloo train station. He appears in the film about trade unions just in the background. And you're like, suspicious. So to give you a quick example, there's a film called The Second Freedom. And this refers to the Atlantic Charter, which reads that all people may live out their lives in freedom from fear and want. So this is talking about fear from want. And in the first draft, they didn't like the first draft of the script. It focused on unemployment, sickness, old age, and bereavement. It mentions the previous economic decline of the 1930s, the realistic limitations of pensions and sick pay, fatal work accidents, the scrutiny claims come under, and the meagre living benefits provide. It's not the normal tone for these films. Some of the feedback goes, it's quite patronising and depressing, though. Their next version of the script, I'm sorry I couldn't find pictures of this, the notion of impoverished pensioners has been done away with entirely. The title has been changed to make it more personal, because it was called something more depressing and socialist before, I guess. And the film now follows one man, a guy called Jack, who never actually suffers unemployment in the film, or sickness. But the topics are still touched on. The Ministry of Health comments back on it, because they ask around, is everybody happy with this? They say there are some inaccuracies. Jack seems to receive a lot of state benefits, and they worry that the average viewer would not be able to distinguish that this was meant to be an ideal and not the real picture. And the notes for this show that the hospital ward, the labour exchange, the factory office and the post office are all sets populated with actors in that film and not real at all. Quick interlude,
the railways
this is what
the actors
train
of industrial Britain's
week.
Trade. Day and night they work, feeding her factories, feeding her people.
Points to whoever knows where that signal box is. Spent a lot of time identifying locations in these films because they often don't name specific locations because they are being distributed during wartime. Right, moving on. Distribution and reception. This is an image from Border Weave. It has a partner film called Western Isle, which shows women singing and making tweed in the traditional fashion, which is incredible. And then they made another one, which is about how it's all being industrialized. I guess they didn't show them in the same places. They were quite canny about where they showed stuff. The films are shown both theatrically and non-theatrically. So when I say theatrically, the way cinemas used to work would be that they would put a feature film on and then they would run newsreels and shorts and stuff. And this would kind of be in amongst the newsreels and things like that. Non-theatrically, they were shown in embassies, community centres, local cinemas, schools, kind of just anywhere you can imagine a projector maybe existing. They were like, let's send them a film. They were also used to teach English in places, which we'll come back to in a second. This is an image from Lessons from the Air, which is about the BBC and how it's not connected to the state. Not all of these have aged well, I'm afraid. I will say that the presentation of these films actually is... I'm obviously coming at it as a depressingly white middle-class person. They're not particularly racist and stuff to watch. There is some diversity in them. They're quite sexist in places. There's a clip I didn't show. Mostly they're fine, but because they're made by different people, they get. There's one which is like, here we are at Wedgwood making cups. Isn't it nice to see a girl putting handles on a cup rather than knocking them off? And you're kind of sat there going, I don't. All of my cups have handles. Maybe it was harder times. Was the washing up too hot? I don't know. Anyway. They were distributed in 27 languages. They did a mixture of, they didn't dub them very often because that was difficult and expensive, but they did distribute them in Spanish and French and stuff, we know that much, and they subtitled them more frequently. But I think they largely just sent them out in English and hoped people might just learn English off the back of it. That's very English, isn't it? So one of the reasons we know about how well this all did is feedback forms. They got feedback forms. There are hundreds of these. These are great. Here's one from Mexico City about Citibound, which is about the London transport infrastructure. London transport is totally unlike that in Mexico City, which is chaotic, and I think our audience were duly impressed. But they would no doubt have preferred a sound version. I'm so curious about that one because it is a sound film. I guess they just forgot the sound. Anyway, from Bogota? Forgive me, I forgot the pronunciation wrong, in Colombia, about Queen Cotton, which is about textile manufacture, a useful insight into one of England's oldest industries, a particularly useful film in the area where the Colombian textile industries are concentrated. Bogota. As this film is probably one of the most impressive, in spite of its technical nature, that has ever come to Colombia, it is a pity that its commentary is in English. There is little doubt that for various reasons, Technicolor films are a great attraction. From Vienna in Austria, talking about London 1942, which is the first one they make about London that looks at the war. The impression of London's energy and vitality made a marked impression. The sight of British people in 1942 interested some who remembered that Great Britain was then supposed to be starving. Yeah. But here's what we call, this one was made me laugh a lot. This is from a school in Kikuyu in Kenya from 1946. There's a film, they did a couple of educational films about various life cycles. One was called Life Cycle of the Newt. It's extremely dull. Their feedback is, newts unknown in Africa. And I've checked, you don't get newts in sub-Saharan Africa. They're quite correct. There's another one, Life Cycle of Maize, which is even worse. They're not all good. Some of them are stunning and genuinely watchable. Some of them are not. This one is about, yeah, the growing of maize. And it says, requires showing twice, presumably because they fell asleep. The fact that maize is only given to hens in the film and is a staple food of Africans is a blunder. Man walking through maize is futile. And I had to go back and check this. I'm like, what do you mean, man walking through maize? Here.
A fully grown maize plantation is dense enough and tall enough for a man to lose his way in it.
They paid money to film that. And then they sent it around the world. Confidence, right? But some of these are super interesting. I think this is what we call the money shot, as it were. This is from... why didn't I write it down? It's from Nicosia in Cyprus. It's from 1946, I think. And it's about Second Freedom, that one we talked about earlier. They got heavily re-scripted until it was less bleak. Films of this type do more harm than good, presenting England as a utopia where maternity homes, model schools, specialised training, employment under ideal conditions are within everyone's reach. Why not show food queues, the tiny meat and fat rations, housing shortage and other uncomfortable facts? The audience, believing the film gives a true picture of conditions in England, is dissatisfied with the absence of similar amenities in Cyprus. So, who saw these films? Because they do look like documentaries. They look very plausible, even if you know they're not. We have the full distribution list from 1940. I took a bit of time and converted that from less good 1940s lists of countries and territories into a 2022 list. There are 150 countries or more that these were distributed to by 2022 standards. They were shown both. They were shown in some places theatrically, in some places non-theatrically, in some places both. The thing is, they weren't just shown in the 1940s. We did a pop-up shop where we screened these in an abandoned subway shop during the London riots. So it didn't go very well, but we had to close and hide all the computers. But there was a guy, we had the screen showing, and there was a guy coming down the street, an older black gentleman, and I said, please come in and see the films, please, nobody's here. He said, there's no need, I saw them growing up in Mauritius in the 1960s, that's how I learned English before I came to Britain. I thought, I suspect this is not the only person in London who I could have asked and got a similar response. So it would appear that these were left in circulation and used until they fell apart, and they were used to teach English extensively. If you look at that list of countries, it's a lot of countries, and some of them are very big. As a piece of context, we have one piece of information which is slightly troubling. One film was seen in Sweden in a, let's call it a two-year period, let's be generous, it's not entirely clear. 400,000 people were estimated to have seen this one title in one country. I don't know what that adds up to across 150 countries over, you know, a 20, 30-year span. But it seems too much of a coincidence to think that... Well, when you look at this film collection, you go, that is exactly what people imagine Britain looked like in the 1940s. And then you go, why do people think Britain looked like that in the 1940s? If anybody wants to do a PhD on this for me, I'll happily give you all my notes. I'm not doing it. But I, you know... There's a lot of immigration into Britain and in the 1950s and the 1960s, and you have to wonder how much of an impact these have made even on the down low, because they do talk a lot about the social healthcare system and the availability of jobs, and everybody looks happy and hardworking, and then there's green spaces, and the housing's all new and modern. And I can imagine anybody who watched these and came to Britain expecting to find that would have been in for a bit of a shock, you know. So let me finish off with another film.
Every day, into the schools of Britain,
this is the one about BBC.
Come pouring experiences drawn from all over the world. Experiences that are not conjured up by the state, but invoked by teachers and educationalists themselves through the BBC.
So here we are today. You can watch and download these for free online under a certain Creative Commons license. And if you scan that QR code, I did test it. I don't think it's spam. You can go to the website. Otherwise, you can just Google British Council Archive Film Collection. It's pretty niche. It should come up. Yeah, and you can watch all of them, basically. And there's a little bit of commentary on each of them, the original descriptions, fun facts written by me. Like, this train didn't make it to its destination. It sunk on the ship. If you like trains, you're going to like this. So, yeah, that's me. I'm just about running over time. I'll hang around if anybody wants to ask me any questions. Otherwise, you can pester me on the internet. And I have ADHD, so I might not read it. But you can try and contact me. Yeah, thank you very much.